Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to guaranteedfoods.com.
Hello. Hey.
3, 2, and 1. Lester, you get to tape for the entire hour here? Okay, great. 3, 2, and 1. Welcome back here in the Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. What's up, Les?
How are you, brother? Fellas?
Yeah. Les Norman breaking the norm. He is hanging out with us. He's presented by truckmovers.com and also First Federal Bank of Kansas City. You look well. Always.
Well, thanks, man. Will this next statement start a thread of conversation? I loved the end of that NBA game last night that I didn't watch. I loved it. And that's because I'm from Chicago.
That makes
sense.
Leaving
it there.
Oh, no, it totally makes sense. You have every right to love that being from Chicago, as you should, man. That is awesome. Yeah, it was an awesome, entertaining ending.
Yeah.
May not have been as great for some that were rooting for the Lakers, but it was still an entertaining game and a great comeback by the night. You loved that comeback, right? Watching every second of that, not waking up and seeing the final score.
Well, I watched as much of that game last night as I watched of NBA the entire season.
Okay, so you just checked the score. Good to know.
You know what? I didn't even check the score. I just listened to you guys.
Hey, there we go.
That's awesome. Where I get my NBA stats and scores and
there
stuff.
You go.
So, and we did all of
9.5 minutes on it. So you just happened to be listening to that part.
You're so thorough, though. I felt like I was there.
That's right, as you should. And the 76ers fan, did you feel at least bad for him a little bit? You know, I know you don't feel bad for anybody that roots for LeBron, but I mean, 76ers fan over here.
I can feel the
poor
pain
guy.
A little bit.
Oh, poor
it's
guy.
Just pain, man. It's just it's pain.
Yeah.
Well, you chose we're still trusting the process.
Chose,
what's the process at this point?
You chose the Sixers, man. You chose
what's the
poorly.
Process?
Should chose the, you know, Lakers or
there's some people that
Bulls
still associate the Sixers
the
with either Iverson or Dr. J.
Eric Snow. We have Eric Snow and Larry Hughes, and that's what we have.
What if you had Percy Snow, though?
That's a pull from
be
like
better.
A week ago. Yeah,
it'd
nice.
Be better if you had Percy Snow. Yeah. Les Norman is our guest, Breaking the Norm, presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City. Tomorrow night, a pretty cool night out at Kauffman Stadium.
Yes.
It is Prostate Cancer Awareness Night
yep.
out at the K. I know you have some prior obligations.
I do.
That you're going to be attending.
Which is a bummer. But, yeah. I would love to be out there, and I was invited by that organization, which was very cool, very kind of them to do that. And again, filling a role with our youth group, and mm-hmm. we're short volunteers right now, and I've been there one of the longest tenured people and can fill a lot of roles, and so that is my commitment. But I'm going to be kind of keeping my eyes on it, and it's interesting what you maybe never are involved in, and then something happens, and then now you're involved in it.
Yeah.
And so I've learned a lot about cancer and prostate cancer, and oh my gosh, so many people out there have suffered from it or are suffering from it or know a loved one. And so, yeah, I'm just proud of that organization. I'm proud of the Royals for allowing them to host that night.
It's not a community it's not a community you would long to join, but it's a community that when you're in feels like there's a lot of people that
yeah.
you can now relate to that, you know,
mm-hmm.
I can't relate because I don't know specifically what you're going through, but other people that are battling prostate cancer, you guys now have that community that's there
right.
of sort of an understanding of each other and what's
yeah.
going on and a support group too.
And I love that. And even to this day, I mean, it's been a few weeks since
yeah.
we shared our moment and launching the whole, hey, this is what I got going on in my life. And I got another email this morning. 3 days ago, one of my best friends and we coached together our boys as they went up before they graduated high school. And he found out, he's like, I'm making an appointment. And he came back and said, hey, mine is all good. But he went.
Yeah.
And I'm still having people say, hey, I went to the doctor, made the appointment. And people are really being proactive. And so the love, the support, and then, like you said, Jason, just the bonding and the encouragement you can give each other. You know, when I found out I was, you know, I say the word sick, although I don't feel, you know, I don't feel bad right now. It's when the surgery comes in June is when the rough start will happen. But just having the people around that you can support. It's everybody wants to love on you, but when you go to a place like tomorrow night at the K, it gives you the opportunity to encourage other people. This isn't just about people calling me, texting me, although all of you that if you have, I so appreciate it. I love you all. It's been amazing. But that doesn't mean you just turn inward. You know, we still need to turn outward because there's other people that are suffering from worse things, you know. And so you can always say, why me? You can think that. But I won't for a day. I haven't for a day. And I'm not going to for a day because there's always people out there struggling. But we need to be encouraging other people, too.
Well, and it's also just a plain fact that there are people walking around right now with prostate cancer that don't know they have it.
That don't know it. Yeah, it's so common. Yeah. Someone told me when I first found out, they said, you know, this is a disease that most times it won't kill you, but so many people, you know, I think the phrase was most men don't die from it. A lot of men don't die from it, but many live with it because they just don't know they have it. It's just that common. Again, more things I'm learning about every day.
Yeah. Les Norman is our guest. You hear him on Breaking the Norm. It's presented by TruckMovers.com and First Federal Bank of Kansas City. Cool night tomorrow night out at the K with the Royals and the Blue Jays. And hopefully they will be they'll have an opportunity to win two in a row tomorrow night out there at the K. That would mean that they would win tonight. So the last time we talked, there was a lot of positive vibes about what's going on with this team. And it's always in baseball, boy, what a difference a week makes, whether that's positive or on the negative side. And right now, it just feels like it's pulling teeth and a struggle to watch this offense. In the last 29 innings, they have scratched across a run in only four of them. Only four times in 29 innings have they scored at least one run. And it has just been tough sledding. And for the first time this year, Les, last night, it happened the first time. It was game, what are they now?
23.
So game 23, last night, that three-run triple, and I thought, my game's over. It's the first time this year. And that used to be a common thought with the Royals over the last, you know, five, six, 7 years.
Sure.
Because of just how I didn't feel that on Saturday, oddly enough. Mm-hmm. Down 7-0, I didn't feel like the game was over. I'm like, this team's going to scratch and claw.
And it wasn't.
And it wasn't, right. But for what, just the way the offense is going right now, it doesn't feel like there's any sort of feel that the next guy up's going to get it done or the next guy up's going to get it done. And that was the feel through the first, you know, 15 games or so of the season. And even on Friday night, right? And the last night was the first time that three-run triple, and I'm like, that's probably ball game because Brady Singer needed to go out there and throw zeros with how this offense is going. And as it turned out, that was because they still would have lost 3-2. I know everything is different, right? The butterfly effect. But did you have that feeling at all, or are you still feeling like, okay, this offense, we'll get it figured out, scratch across some runs. This is just a rough patch right now with last night that had one, two, three, four, five guys in the lineup batting under 200.
Yeah, right.
Five of your nine guys.
Look, there are a couple things that are concerning, but overall, I'm not concerned. I mean, after you come off of a 100-loss season, it's easy to have a default setting of, boom, there it is. We're 23 games in, and all of a sudden, ooh, there's that yucky feeling again that, you know, I ate the bad jalapeno, and now I'm suffering for it. So if you look at the at-bats column, nobody's at 100 at-bats yet. Yeah. And for me, that is my baseline, at least on the offensive side. What we're seeing right now is that the ship is correcting itself. You know, the coordinates are coming back to where they need to be. And we knew coming in a good season for this team was going to be around that 500 mark. I mean, if we got them to 81-81 or, you know, 82-80, you know, just somewhere around, even if it was five games under, five games over, somewhere in there, we would consider that a successful season just because of where the Tigers are, especially where the Guardians are, where the Twins are supposed to be but aren't right now, that could still get there. And so they're still three games over 500.
Yeah.
But it is only game 23. And I know patterns start to develop and all that. So overall, not concerning. You have to give pitchers. They were so good to this point. I mean, we got to give them a little bit of a break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know everybody probably thought that Bobby Wood Jr. was going to hit 360 the whole season.
I'm shocked he's not still hitting 360. Yeah. I'm disappointed, and I feel like
he's not even hitting 300.
I feel like the bottom is about to fall out of Bobby Witt's entire career.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Do you trade him right now? I mean,
I think you just release him. and pay him first in his whole contract, 14 years, and then just release him.
That's probably the best way to go.
Somebody right now is in
tough
the other room.
Fair.
Somebody in the other room is at work right now in the other room running in. Did he just say what? We're kidding. No.
Tough but fair. Sometimes you got to make the tough decisions. That's what they pay J.J. Piccolo for.
Yeah. Look, I'm not in panic mode. You have to have a short memory in this game, and you got to put the three-game thing behind them. Okay, they lost three games in a row, 4-5. And just look forward. Let them get to 100 at-bats. I mean, it's easy to look at, okay, Michael Garcia got down really fast after a hot start. So, okay, so he hit a home run and on an inside pitch by Kikuchi, which was a really good pitch, and he turned on it. And it was mechanically perfect, and I just love the swing. Oh, so all of a sudden, is he going to be back to hitting 450 again? I mean, every game is different, and you have to get the highs and lows. Some days you just feel mechanically good, but you just don't see the ball well. In other days, your timing is just off for no other reason except your timing is off. And some days, pitchers are just picking perfect and making the perfect pitches, and other days, they can't find it to save their life. And so you got to really spread it out a little bit. That's the long answer. The short answer is a couple things maybe make me look like, that could be disheartening. But overall, 23 games, let them get to 100 at-bats, let the rotation get five starts under their belt, and then you're going to get a better idea. But again, if the beginning of the season you said in 23 games, Sterling, tell me what you think. If I said at the beginning of the season, the day before opening day, after 23 games, will you take 13-10?
Oh, yes.
Immediately.
Yes, yes,
in a
yes.
Heartbeat. No negotiating immediately.
Right. So when you lose three games, it's easy for us to take our mind off of that and try to say, oh, what's wrong? And, oh, there's a panic button. There shouldn't be a panic button. At any time, this offense can put up 10 runs. I mean, sure, they haven't. But they're the best teams in baseball that are at the top of it haven't. I mean, we have a better record than the Dodgers, I think, right now, or very similar. I didn't check it exactly, but it's really close. You know, I mean, the Rockies have, what, won 4-5 maybe? The White Sox are still only 3 wins. I mean, there's good teams out there that still haven't produced as much. And so let this thing ride out a little bit. Get to 50 games before we worry.
Yeah, half game better than the Dodgers. They're 13-11. The Royals are 13-10.
And their payroll's a little different.
Slightly.
They have half of $1 billion more. Half game better the Royals, half a billion more for the Dodgers payroll.
Again, not concerned because I understand what you're saying. Expectations versus what we're seeing right now. Yeah, 13-10 is phenomenal. You look at the runs scored for the Royals, I think it's a little misleading because of the explosions they have had along with a lot of the few runs scored, as Jason was mentioning. One of the things that has me slightly concerned that they're going to re-correct towards the negative, they're still the second-best team in Major League Baseball in runs given up. 75 runs given up, second-best in baseball. That's with the pitching staff being phenomenal. You're not going to get this stretch many times. You may get it one time in a season, and they're getting it right now at the start.
Well, they're also maybe a little bit correcting with course correcting and regressing to the mean with Lugo and Brady Singer's last couple of outings, with giving up, what, 9 earned runs in a total of 10 innings with those two guys.
Well, did we expect the Cy Young from either one
of
those guys?
No, we did not. But my point was you can't waste the phenomenal starts. You cannot waste the 7 innings.
Winning teams can't.
Winning teams, Kate. Like Cole Reagan's, how he's yet to have a win. Take out that 7-run game, but the fact of the matter is he had 0 wins with a 1-point-something going into that. You got to win those games. Mm-hmm. You can't have L's when they're giving up 0 or 1 run going 7 innings as a starter. Brady Singer last night, that's going to happen. I thought he actually pitched fairly well. But it's going to happen when good offenses get you. You mentioned the pitch that Michael Garcia hit out for a home run. The 3-run triple was a phenomenal slider low and away outside of the zone. You tip your
cap.
With
a guy with a really long swing by.
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to throw him out there because he's just got this long, loopy swing, and he just connected it. So here's what I'll say to that. Do you remember the name Anthony Young? You guys remember that name?
Mm-mm.
No.
Pitcher for the Mets, the Cubs. Back in my day, of course, y'all be youngins up around here. But Anthony Young, and look it up, I don't remember exactly, but there was a stretch where he was like 2-20-something and had like a sub-3 ERA. I mean, he literally was a 20-game loser or something. It was crazy.
Wow. 1993, he was 1-16, 3.77 ERA.
Sub
for the
season.
That's for the season, though, so he may have had a stretch, yeah.
Yeah. And so think about that. A sub-4 ERA... and was 1-16. So you have to give guys opportunities to have bad outings to be able to sort things out. I mean, you're just, this is not a team where you have guys that are going to win a Cy Young most likely. I mean, if they did, wow, incredible, great, or an MVP. You've got a couple guys that could, Bobby Witt Jr. being that guy. But again, the course has to correct. Big leagues are a game of chess. One of the things that don't get talked about a lot are the difficult but yet often successful jobs of advanced scouts. Because the scouts are reporting back to, well, while we're playing the Blue Jays, the Royals' advanced scouts right now are in Detroit. They're getting ready to focus on the Rangers and the Brewers and the Angels all coming up. We're going back to Toronto in a couple weeks. And so you've got advanced scouts out there doing their job saying, hey, this is what Bobby Witt Jr. is hitting. This is how we can get him out. And so then they have their pitchers meeting, and then that's what big league pitchers do. They figure some things out. You know, tonight they're facing Kevin Gausman, who there's two guys that have hit good. It's I think, Frazier and Hampson. Own him. Everybody, yeah, Frazier and Hampson own him. Everybody else does not. So you're going to see Frazier and Hampson probably tonight, and if not, maybe we probably should have a little more attentiveness in the meeting. But so advanced scouting, it's just that chess match back and forth. And 23 games in, you're going to see a little bit of a swing of that, and then the Royals now will work. Okay, how are they getting us out? And then they'll swing it back the other way. It's just how it works.
The matchup tonight is interesting because you have feast or famine on both sides,
right,
with the Royals offense. And then, like, Kevin Gausman has two outings in which he threw a combined 9 1/3 and gave up only two runs. His other two outings were a combined 5 innings where he gave up 11 runs. Yeah. So you've got two really good outings, two bad outings. You've got the Royals that can stack runs, you know, constantly in an inning and hit around, right, and score 7 runs in an inning. And then you've got a Royals offense that can scratch across a run 4 times over 29 innings and only, you know, 4 innings where they scored out of the last 29. You've got that offense. So either it could be another great Gausman outing because of the Royals offense, or they can break out a little bit and make him pay. And you got Michael Wacha on the mound, which, I mean, you go get Wacha for something like this. I mean, he's a streak stopper. Mm-hmm. That's why, wasn't that our excitement about the starting staff, is that when you got a staff this good, you shouldn't have prolonged losing streaks because you'll throw somebody out there that day every night that gives you a chance to win.
Yeah.
Yes, and you have to take advantage of Kevin's struggles so far, because Kevin Gausman was third in the Cy Young voting last year.
Yeah, right, right.
The last 3 years, he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, he's not a scrub.
Last year, he had a 3.16 ERA. He was an all-star. Yeah. Dude was a stud. You got to take advantage of these guys. I'm sure, Les, you probably have a good understanding of this, too. Just guys who, it takes some of these very good all-star pitchers a little bit of time to get into that rhythm. It feels like you sometimes see these stud pitchers. You'll see some of the borderline guys, the 3 and 4 starters, come out and have great starts. But what does it look like at the end of the year? Typically, it's these guys that come back down and throw. Oh, yeah. Those 4 starts at the beginning of the season, yeah, they had that 12 ERA. Now it's a 3.16.
Right. And the veteran guys like that don't panic. They know what's coming. They know they're not going to be bad. While the whole world is just looking at the numbers on the scoreboard and the stat sheet, they understand what they're doing. They stick with the plan. That's why those guys stick around long enough. You know, you think about, well, why does this guy? I'm looking at his career stats. Then there's this guy, and I look at his career stats, and that's the intangible side of it. Some guys don't have that mental strength after the experience. They panic. They try to tinker too much, and they take themselves out of the game or out of a rotation or something like that, and you have... But you're going to have two guys going against each other tonight that both have that veteran, strong experience. They know how to make adjustments. They don't panic. You know, you look at Gausman tonight. 0-2, 8.18 or something like that, ERA. Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll crush that guy. Oh, really? Okay, well, we'll find out around 10 o'clock tonight. And the same with Wacha. I mean, oh, he's only 1-2. We're going to hammer that guy. Okay, we'll step in against him, and we'll see that. And so they're just able to make those adjustments and have the long-term process in their mind. And that's why they've stuck around, along with being healthy. That's why they've stuck around so long.
But it's also, you know, tells you a little bit, if you look at Vegas, what they think. As you mentioned, Gausman, 8.16 ERA. My goodness, he's 0-2. Wacha, 3.75 ERA. Royals are playing at home. They've been struggling a little bit. This is a bounce-back game. Toronto, favored, -122 for Toronto to win tonight. With a guy on the mound, if you look at the numbers, that guy's got an 8 ERA playing on the road against the Royals pitcher that's got a sub 4, and the Royals are +102 to win tonight.
Yeah, because Vegas is going, well, we don't think Gossman's that pitcher. We don't think his numbers are indicative of what he is. And the Royals' offense is, you know, really struggling right now. And I, you know what, a pretty good indication of the offense and maybe guys trying to do a little too much is in the eighth inning, down 5-2, with one out and nobody on, and Vinny Pasquantino swings at a pitch in the other batter's box on 1-2 and swings through it. And it's like, I don't know that I've seen him swing at that pitch this year. Even when he was struggling, he didn't swing at that pitch. Now that he's going well and he's hitting the ball, I wonder if that at bat was like, I got to get something going here. It's 1-2, and then
pressure.
You know,
I'm
thinking about trying to get something going instead of just having a good at bat to hand it off to Salvi behind me.
I'll tell you guys this: it's very logical what we're talking about here. And well, he's been around enough, and he's a good enough hitter that, you know, he swung at that, and that took us out of it. You know, whether it's minor leagues, big leagues, doesn't matter. If you're going up in a difficult situation and you're feeling good and you've lost a couple games in a row and you're thinking, I own this guy, I'm going to be on the attack, it's amazing the 10 feet from the on-deck circle, the 20 feet from the on-deck circle to the batter's box, how stupid you can become as a hitter, because you just start thinking. Even if it's right, you just start thinking. And as soon as you start thinking, you're going to swing at pitches that are in the other batter's box, and then you're going to walk away like, what am I doing? Why did I even go that route? Instead of really, and I've always called it this, I'll always call it, it's caveman dumb at the batter's box. You get your plan, but you become caveman dumb where you're not thinking, oh, I gotta. No, stick with your plan. You can think that way, but that's not about pressure. That's, you're not taking me out of my game. This is my game plan, instead of thinking, oh, I've got to do something. And as soon as you think that, that's the pitch that's in the other batter's box. Even though they can't read your mind, you feel like they can. And then you pressure yourself into an out.
And I do wonder, and it would be only natural that the way the offense is going, that it's the eighth inning, you're down by three, Witt's on first, Salvi behind you. And after Salvi, it's sort of cavernous until you get back to Bobby again. Mm-hmm. I need to drive in a run here. I need to drive the gap, and I need to do something to where we can score some runs, and maybe Salvi then, you know, can keep it going, and maybe we hit enough to where we can come back up in the ninth. You know,
so
I got to do something here.
What you just said blows up at bats.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what you're saying. And that's where even guys like Vinny sometimes we're all susceptible to. Even Bobby, you know, everybody's susceptible to it, whether it's age or pressure, whatever it may be. So you're thinking that line of thinking is correct if you add to it, on a pitch that I can drive.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about, I need to get a hit here. Mm-hmm. I need to get every at bat with somebody on base, your goal should be to drive a run in. That's just part of it. So you shouldn't be thinking about it. That's just baseball. What you're thinking about is that, okay, I see that gap over there, and if I'm strong the other way, like we just talked about Bichette's triple, tell me he wasn't looking away with a swing like that. That's his strength. If I get something away, I'm going to hammer it. And he did. He hammered it. By the way, his belt would have caught that ball. I just wanted to say that. He would have caught it. I would have caught it. But, you know, back when I was 25, I would have caught it. But the idea is that
you
have to think.
With both.
you have to think about pitches that you can drive, so you're thinking zone, not what the result is. Because if you only think about result, you're trying to force yourself into it, and you swing at pitcher's pitches.
I would love to touch more on Salvi, just because we're talking about some of the negatives and the cavernous hole that is after Salvador Perez, but somehow he's in his prime at age 33. I don't understand how Salvador Perez gets injured, misses a game when I think the majority of players are missing weeks or at least being placed on the IL, comes back, and continues to be the best hitter on the Royals right now. And by the way, what's fascinating is he's taking walks. This has been a new development in Salvador Perez. I don't think this is going to continue by any means. I don't think all of a sudden we're saying Salvador Perez, wow, great eye, because you look at the chase percentage, it's second percentile in Major League Baseball.
It's Barry Bonds all of a sudden. He's just
but
walking.
But dude is walking. His on-base percentage is 400.
It's 2012 Joey Votto. What's going on with this guy? Where'd he come from?
Like, he's top five on the Royals, fourth in walks this year. What?
It's great. I mean, it's a new Salvi, you know?
And by the way, I think the most impressive thing is, again, I don't know how much the walk continues or how much the defense continues, but the knock against him has never been his arm. Not even blocking. It's been the pitch framing. Well, he's been graded out as one of the best pitch framers in baseball this year. We know he's a guy who's very dedicated, right? We know he's a guy who wants to get out there and work. I don't know how long this lasts, but he's in the 92nd percentile in framing this season. So for a guy who had that as his weakness, now becoming one of the best strengths in baseball, coupled with the fact that he's the best hitting catcher in baseball at least so far, there's no drop-off. I don't understand how Salvi's doing this at 33.
Yeah.
You got a little stat that shows you how good you are at tricking the umpire.
But it's true. Until they take it away.
I know. That's what I'm saying. You've got the technology that, like, he is so good at making the umpire look bad at his job. Like, this guy is really good.
Well, most do it themselves. But
you ain't wrong.
My
about
love
that.
Of umpires.
Dylan.
I was just going to say, robot umpires will take that art away from baseball, essentially. It'll remove the need for a catcher to have framing ability, which is, I don't like that.
You want the catcher to be able to frame.
Right.
And the little pop of the glove.
I think it was Paul Skeens. They set up inside and he missed outside, but it was a strike.
Yeah.
Which Les knows that's not, it is technically because it crosses the plate, but, you know, we're at the highest level. So when your catcher sets up inside and he has to almost reach into the other batter's box, that shouldn't be a strike either.
I think it should be. Did it go over the plate or not? I mean, it shouldn't matter where you set up. You know,
I'm just going to say
set up in the other dugout and throw it right down the middle. That's still a strike.
Jason, you've heard me on the show for years.
I know.
And I was always against it. And I'm just going to say now, I'm done with umpires.
Yeah.
It's time. Seriously, it's time. And all the history and the people that, Les, you've gone to the dark side. I just can't keep watching over and over again. If umpires had accountability, I would say completely different. But there is zero accountability. None of them get reprimanded. They keep getting jobs. The only thing is Angel Hernandez won't get to work the playoffs. The problem is that Angel Hernandez continues to get to work.
That guy's atrocious.
So, on Saturday, Cole Reagan's a great call by Ryan LaFever. Pitch right down the middle for ball one.
Yeah.
It was how do you miss that pitch? Like that?
Well, up to that point, you know, the catcher wasn't giving him a good target.
That's the first pitch.
I love how the two youngest guys in the show, by the way, are the ones who are for, at least, I want accountability for umpires, but I love that the youngest two guys are like, no, we want the umpires and part of what makes it so special. And then the two older gentlemen here.
I was that for years, Sterling. I was that guy. I mean, Jason, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I would fight tooth and nail, but I just keep watching the same stuff.
We beat him down over the years. It's my fault.
Accountability.
We beat him down over the years. It's my fault that Les would come
I'm
in
my
for,
own man.
He'd come in for an hour and go, enough, I get it. All right, you keep showing me example after example of these strikes.
Okay, it's just, if we get Angel out, those numbers are going to really come back to normal pretty quick.
Why do you want to take away Angels?
Just an angel.
Oh, just one.
Just one.
We can all do with one less in the game of baseball. There were angels in the outfield. We just want less angel behind the plate. That's all we want. Put them in the outfield, okay? Put them way out there.
Just as crazy. I'll end with this. Sorry, but as crazy is that we want them to have accountability. The thing that makes me more mad is that when I hear people say that there is accountability. Ted Barrett's a friend of mine. I greatly, greatly admire Ted Barrett. Or on field, off the field. I mean, anybody that spars with George Foreman, that's my kind of guy right there in the day. But he's told me before on my show that there is accountability. We do have these meetings, but you don't see that. Mm-hmm. We just don't see it. And they keep getting out there. So accountability, and then stop telling me that there is when there isn't.
Right, but accountability is like when there's action involved in it. Accountability is like, hey, you got to stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't?
Yeah.
Well, we're just going to have another meeting to tell you to stop doing that. You know, we saw, and who was the home plate umpire just yesterday? I don't know if you saw that, Les, that Aaron Boone got ejected from
Hunter
the game.
Hunter Wendelstedt, who I used to love having arguments with in the minor leagues.
Hunter ejected Aaron Boone for something a fan said.
But you see what he said, though. Did you see the response to what he said? You saw it right there.
Didn't matter who said it.
And he blamed somebody at the end of the dugout, which I don't believe at all. That's just an easy way out. Comment
have you
to justify that he had no idea.
Have you seen the picture that somebody put with the strike zone around Aaron Boone? So it's a strike zone around Aaron Boone, and the fan is sitting right above Aaron Boone. And so you got the strike zone, and then outside of the strike zone is the dot, and it said, Well, at least umpires are consistent.
Wow. That's good. I like that.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk about the lack thereof, and maybe is there an answer for what's going on with Michael Garcia. Kyle Isbell, Les mentioned he thinks he catches that ball in center field. Is that worth, you know, the at-bats? I guess if Hampson's in there batting 200, yeah, the better defense would be worth it. If you're batting 190 and 200, that's sort of indiscernible. But we'll talk about that with Les Norman and a couple of other things as well. We continue rolling along. More Zone right after this. They passed a new law in the FCC that you are not allowed to talk before it hits the guitar there. Just the bells. You have to wait till the bells till you get the other music in there. It's a new law now. So
bells in rock songs kick so much ass,
yeah,
dude.
And you have to wait for every one of those bells to the rest of the song to start before you can talk. New law. Passed it last
Hell's
week.
Hell's bells. You're waiting a while.
That's fine.
You're waiting a little
How
bit.
How about this? Don't play the song to start the segment then. You know, that's
Dylan, play the song to start the segment. We need more bells on this show.
Okay.
Well, I have a fever.
What's your prescription?
More bell.
More cowbell. That's what you need.
Cock and a bell. Walk, baby. I can't get that specific because this is not a cowbell.
Yeah. Cock and a walk, baby. All right. Les Norman is our guest. Breaking the Norm, presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City. I want to talk about a couple players that did homer last night, and so I'm hoping that this is the start of something. So I'll ask you, with Michael Garcia, he's been in the leadoff spot, and the first few games of the season, it was like, okay, this guy's different. All right, he's got the launch angle, and he is different because he's already hit four home runs this year, and he hit, what, three all of last year? Or four all of last year?
And left. Number four was in August.
Yeah, so he hit four all of last year in like 122nd game, and he hit his fourth in his 22nd game. So, yes, it's a little different this year. But he's also been on base only 10 times in his last 12 games. Just getting on base safely 10 times over 12 for your leadoff hitter. Not good enough. So I do wonder, as you know, the early part of the season, 3 weeks of baseball, does the home run break the slump, or are we sort of delaying the inevitable that there's going to have to be a change at somebody at leadoff because it's not sustainable for your leadoff hitter to be getting on base at 215?
If he turns out to be an RBI guy, he's only going to hit 250 and not get on base much, but when he does make contact, he hits home runs, then he has to be out of that spot. I mean, the problem is right now, who else?
That was another question.
Yeah, you don't have anybody
else. Answer,
I mean,
then?
Right now, the only other person I would think of would be somebody like Isbell, who's your center fielder and can steal bases and all that. But and I know we'll talk about him in a minute. But, I don't see any time someone hits a home run as they're coming. You know, if they're slumping a little bit and they hit a home run, like, oh, it's fixed. Because on some of my worst days or some of my worst slumps, I mean, I started the 99 season in AAA like 0-26 or something like that. I mean, it was horrible. And to finish the season at 260 was a monumental get there and work every day, because once you get a lot of at-bats, it's hard to do that. And so you hit a home run, like, okay, now I've got it. Everything's good. And then you're 0-for your next 8 again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't know. You definitely mentally need to ride that, like, okay, that felt good, but don't start trying to hit home runs. Just make solid contact. So if the result of that home run was him just see it, hit it, great. If he just was like, oh, I'm just going to come out of my shoes, you know, then it's another issue. And so you still got to monitor it. Right now, he's probably the best option there, with maybe an Isbell type on the other side of that. I personally like lefties in a little bit more. I think Michael Garcia's got a little bit of a long swing for a leadoff hitter, but he was still able to turn on that ball last night. But, I'd stay with him, but still have the backup plan.
Is there a feel of, you know, in your career of like, all right, I'm finally breaking out. Maybe it wasn't like the home run. Okay, I'm like, it's like if Michael Garcia hits the home run, yes, I'm done. But do you have a feel where you're like, okay, I know now it's not just a flash in the pan home run. I know now I'm breaking out of the slump and I'm getting back into the way that I swing the bat.
Yes, but it's not because of the home run.
Yeah, right.
If you're an intelligent enough hitter that you're not going to lie to yourself like, wow, I got lucky there. I just guessed right. Or it's how I got to the big leagues. It was the old Tom Browning down on the rehab assignment. I said, hey, how would you pitch me? I'm struggling. He's like, I'd throw a fastball right down the middle because you're not making solid contact. I'm like, well, you're a jerk. He's like, well, you asked. He's right. And so he said, try to get jammed. Try to just break your bat on the next fastball that you see. Like, I'm going to waste an at-bat. He's like, I've been here a week. You've wasted all your at-bats. Go ahead and do it. And so the next at-bat, the guy threw me like 91, 92 on the inside corner, and I hit it about 440 feet to left center as a 185-pound guy. And I didn't have that kind of power, but he was right. And I ended up going on some crazy 20 for 24-25 streak, and 2 weeks later I was in the big leagues for the first time. So it's a matter of how you get there. If you know you're feeling good and you're like, it's just the approach, I'm going to stick with the approach, I'm going to stay disciplined, that's what makes you feel like you're coming out of it. But the home run, just running into it by accident, you know, you can fake it, but you know, you'll get exposed if you're not locked in.
I think you're right. There's no correct leadoff hitter for the Royals right now. I think MJ Melendez is an unconventional one because he typically takes a lot of walks, right? He's lefty, but the issue with him is he's also in a slump. And he's not, I don't think, a considered singles hitter. But MJ Melendez, for a guy who takes a lot of walks, takes a lot of pitches, acts just a lot faster than people give him credit for, while he won't steal a lot of bases, he's not going to clog up the base paths. Michael Garcia is who you want, but historically has not taken a lot of walks. What's interesting is this year you actually look at a lot of the underlying. I'm a big process guy, right? Kind of the same thing. You can hit a couple home runs here. You think everything's fixed, but let's be real now. We know it's not. With Michael Garcia, there's just something so close. He's still hitting the ball extremely hard when he is making contact. He's not chasing a lot. He's in the 90th percentile, so it's not like he's swinging at bad pitches. He just swings early in the count, right? So he's not going to take a lot of walks. He's very aggressive. The average exit velocity is good. The hard hit percent's good. It's not necessarily just unlucky, because I feel like I hate just saying he's unlucky. I think that's lazy to say. But I think moving him down in the lineup where there's less pressure, move him down to 7. Maybe you do switch out MJ just for a couple of games, because a lot of the underlying analytics on Michael aren't horrendous. I just think he's pressing right now. Sure. Take some pressure off him, because he looks close. He's close.
Yeah, I agree. I don't. The one glaring stat there is that he swings for a leadoff hitter. Now, again, if he's not a leadoff hitter, they're just putting in there because he's the best option. Maybe you don't take him out of his game. Maybe it's okay for him to swing early in the count. I mean, I let off early in my minor league career for probably 4 or 5 years. I was more of a leadoff hitter until I got shifted down to the 2-3 hole. And then later on, only because we played on a couple teams that just didn't have one and I could make enough contact, I was, you know, a lot slower was I pressed 30. But you don't want to change a guy's game because if that's his strength. So you need to look at things, Sterling, like hard hit, walks. Is he only getting an average of 2 to 3 pitches per at-bat, or is he seeing 4 to 6 pitches per at-bat? That will probably tell you a little bit more as well. And so I don't look at, again, 100 at-bats for me is the metric, because were we saying that Vinny Pasquantino was going to have a horrible year? He had 3 good games, and all of a sudden, oh, we forgot.
No, right.
And all of a sudden, Vinny's hitting 267 or 9 or something like that, and for how he started, we feel like he's hitting 400. Because now he's got 4 home runs, and he's getting hot, and some people are picking Vinny to be the home run leader. So
he's got more walks than strikeouts.
Yeah. Don't look at batting average yet. And MJ, is MJ Melendez in a slump? Is it because he's hitting 230? Is it because he's striking out? You know, what is the reason why? Are we saying, oh, he just got so hot early that, remember, when you don't have a lot of at-bats, you can have not a slump, but a bad streak, and your average goes down really fast. Where if we had another month and it was the same streak, he might only have lost 10 points on his average versus 65 points on his average.
Well, what's intriguing with MJ is he's now in line with his career batting average. He's in line with his career on base percentage, which gives you a little bit of, okay.
The history's there.
The history is starting to talk to you. What's interesting is the slugging is still much higher. He's still OPS in 790 for a guy batting 232. Again, there's some pop in his bat. Again, you and I have talked about this. I think it's very, very important to still give credit where credit's due. His defense is still very much improved.
Yeah.
Where's the range at? Again, second percentile last year. Still at 34th percentile, so we're not talking about an elite outfielder, but it's much improved in the arm value and the arm strength, 100th percentile.
So, yeah, he's taking it seriously.
And again, the base running, again, not a fast guy. His sprint speed is actually just below Michael Garcia's, 0.3, 27.6 versus 27.9, which is, quite frankly, a lot higher than Kyle Isabel's. Not a fast guy. Smart base runner,
right,
but not a very fast player.
Yeah.
Do you subscribe to the theory of
when you hit in front of a really good hitter that you should see better pitches? Because if that's the case, then I would be a little more concerned about Garcia when Bobby Witt, who was just white hot and was batting 400, right? And just like every time he swung, he was hitting home runs and doubles like, you know, Mookie Betts with the Dodgers. But do you subscribe to that, that if Bobby Witt's on deck, I got to make sure that I'm not walking Michael Garcia. So therefore, you know, I got to give him maybe a little bit more to hit. Is that just the outsider sort of old school mentality view of, well, you're hitting in front of that best hitter, you're going to get some great pitches?
Well, I think that you can really take away your strengths, and by automatically saying Bobby Witt Jr., Sal Perez, they're hitting behind me, so they're going to attack me, you know, or I have to make sure I get on base. Again, you're forcing your mental game to focus on the result, and so you press. Again, I think in, again, this is a minor league career, but it's a career. I think 8 of my 104-something home runs in the minor leagues were the first pitch of the game. Because what better pitch am I going to see?
Yeah,
you're going to throw it like the pitch Ryan LaFever called the other night. I just swung at that. I'd have come out of my shoes because if it was that location that I could drive, that I like that inner lower strike, where if you throw it there, I don't care what count it is. And so look, if just because Bobby Witt Jr. is hitting behind me and I'm good at an outside corner fastball between 90 and 94, and then he gives me the first pitch and I take that. Okay, now I've just given up my strength, and now I've given the pitcher many more options to get me out. That's not being a protector of Bobby Witt Jr. I need to still look at my strengths. Now, don't swing at other pitches unless you're 0-2, but it's going to depend on the pitcher. It's going to depend on how they're pitching the hitter. But if you automatically give yourself up to say, okay, well, I have to take more pitches, the pitchers are going to know that, and they're going to start attacking you more, and then you're going to get defensive because you're seeing a lot more sweepers and sliders and splits down two, and so now you're trying to fight to stay alive versus being aggressive in a proactive approach.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and continue rolling with Les Norman. Breaking the Norm is presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City. Royals in action coming up tonight against the Blue Jays with Michael Wacha on the mound. More Zone next. All right, Les, what do you got coming up on Breaking the Norm?
Dude, this is a great call today. I got a new show today coming. It's going to air later on Tuesday. Sid Bream.
What?
The Slide.
Wow,
Sid,
yes,
Bream,
the Slide
is coming on the show, man. I'm so excited to talk to him. He was a stud at Liberty.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. I'm going to text my buddy, one of the guys that we coach with, big Braves fan. So text him, hey man, Sid Bream's coming on the
Believe it.
Station. That's awesome, brother. Les Norman, Breaking the Norm, presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City. As always, you're the man. Appreciate it. Look forward to our conversation next week already, man.
Me too. Gentlemen out there, get your PSA test.
PSA test. And tomorrow night is Prostate Cancer Awareness Night out at the K. So go enjoy some baseball as well. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and we will talk with Todd Lebo next.